Hola, mi amigo. It's the Loftus Party. This week, I'm back in Vegas. I do it a couple times a year, but I have drawn to Vegas like a moth to a flame. It's a very special episode of the Loftus Party. Not only do we have Liberty Gypsy back in her Liberty camp, we have, for the first time ever, a very special guest. You've read his stuff at redalertpolitics.com. He's a fantastic dude. We met him at CPAC. He's about to be a guest on the Flipside television show. We just that one comes out like next week. Please welcome to the show, Ryan James Gerdusky. Ryan, how's it going, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
You sound like it. It's like watching a glass of champagne, just like the bubbles are just coming to the surface.
All right, I'll do better. I'm so excited to be here.
There you go. I like it. You know, I don't care if you have to fake it.
I'm from New York, so nothing interests me that much. But I'm excited to be here.
I'm living in terror of I haven't been to my New York apartment in like a month. And I'm living in terror. I just like hobos are living in there and there's like animals and stuff.
Well, forget hobos, hipsters. I mean, that's even worse. All it is the smell of ganja, coffee, and regret. I mean, that's all you have.
So. With just a wisp of patchouli.
Is that still a thing?
Oh, it is.
They're
everywhere.
Wow. Yeah. I did not know that.
So, Ryan, you're a writer at Red Alert Politics. You've got to be on top of it, man. How many articles did you say you write for those guys a week?
About 25 a week, give or take. It depends on if like, I have a big exclusive or a long exclusive, which I didn't last week, but I did the week before. And it's great. You know, I've been their number one writer almost consistently for 2 years. I've grown a lot with them, and the company really took off. It's a site for millennials by millennials. You know, the people that the media loves to sit there and analyze over and over again. And it's doing really, really good. It's growing. It's growing in with our biggest readership is like 25 to 32 year olds. So it's a super good. It's a great market for conservative media because most conservative or traditional viewers of conservative media are fairly much older.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, have you been to my website at all? Have you been to theloftusparty.com?
Yes, I have. I of course I did. I also IMDb'd you. I did all my homework.
Holy smoke. How's the IMDb? I hear my IMDb page is horrible.
You know, it's not horrible. It does need work. Like, it doesn't have anything personal about you. And I think it only has like a select few of things that you've actually done. I think you're more accomplished than it lets on for.
Here, I'll drop a new one on you. You might have seen me on CNN.
I heard you on CNN today. How was that?
It was great. They asked for me to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Now, I think it was supposed to be a comic on the left and a comic on the right, and we were supposed to fight over it. But, like, honestly, now
– Who was the comic on the left?
Oh, my gosh. He's got a show on XM satellite radio.
Well, he's doing really well then.
He was a very nice
Excellent
guy.
Satellite radio.
He's performing. Pete Dominic was his name.
And now performing in front of fives of tens of people. Pete Dominic, everybody.
He was a very nice guy. We didn't fight. Now, here was the great thing. Stacey, did you see the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I was trying to go back and forth between the rally and the White House Correspondents' Dinner and look at Twitter and do all that kind of stuff. So my attention was a little bit divided.
I did have mixed feelings on it. Like, I got to give it. Okay, for one thing, the kid told this one joke. I keep calling him Mickey Minaj. I am. You know what? I'm just going to call him Mickey Minaj. He told this one joke. Hey, don't get mad when Trump goes golfing because all the time he's on the golf course, that's times he's not being president. And I'm like, yay, hooray. I love that joke because I told that joke about Obama 2 years ago on the flip side. So I'm like, I can't really get mad at him about that. And then I also liked his slams on MSNBC. Ooh, and when I was on CNN, I'm like, I always like to watch MSNBC to see if Mika's crying. I just like to check in to see if she's still holding it together.
Like Michael so purposefully goes there to MSNBC to talk about Joy-Ann Reed and Mika.
Joy Reed.
Joy Reed, yeah.
Joy Reed.
And then the one I liked is I liked Nicki Minaj's slam on CNN too. I thought he was very funny with that. Like, you know, hey, what are your thoughts on the blah, blah, blah crisis? Texas, that, but you're like, hey, no, you're the news. How about you tell me what's going on? However, when it all came down to First Amendment stuff, and this was the theme of the latest episode of The Flip Side, the one that, Ryan, you're going to be on, was the First Amendment. Like, when he wraps it all up in, like, this First Amendment crap, like, no one is attacking the First Amendment. No one.
Well, the left is. Antifa is, at Berkeley University is, but President Trump isn't. But, you know, he is, I think Republicans have this weird belief system that they're going to be the left's friend. That, you know, had it been like Marco Rubio instead of Donald Trump, that he wouldn't be mocked as cruelly as he's. Every Republican is going to be made out to be like Hitler. They just are. That's their game. It has nothing to do with the facts. It has nothing to do with what's actually with the issues that they're campaigning for. It's just the nature of the left to run there. So, yeah, it makes, you know, I forget what debate it was. I think it was in 2012. I think it was Mitt Romney and, Wolf Blitzer. Wolf Blitzer sits there and asks Mitt Romney about banning birth control. And like, God bless Mitt Romney. He goes, what are you talking about? No one is banning birth control. Like, what are you talking about? But they run to these non-issues all the time just to sit there and give you the memo. Oh, yeah, by the way, he's bad. This person's bad.
Yeah, like, I guess on the chairs at the correspondence dinner were these little pins about the First Amendment. Like, yeah, no one's taken away the First Amendment. And the last time I checked, Trump has been way more open with the press than Obama was, and right. I haven't seen like a Trump, you know, boycott certain press outlets, and I haven't seen him spying on reporters from Fox and having people's phones tapped. It's insane.
Yeah. But those facts, they don't matter. I mean, Barack Obama could have done anything to the press and they would have embraced him. I forget what rapper it was. It was Van Jones, I believe, or one of those, or Torre was the one who said it. Torre [S2] Yeah. [S1] Said that, Barack Obama could have, come out as gay and left Michelle for a white man and he would have gotten 95% of the black vote. They are the same. The media is the same.
Yeah.
Way. They don't care whatsoever. It's not about issues or integrity. It is totally about politics and being in the right fashionable crowd. And that's, I mean, that's why they call it nerd prom. These are the people who couldn't get, you know, dates to the alternative prom, let alone the regular one. So they throw this function in Washington, D.C., where all the men have double chins and all the women have no upper lip, no ass, and can't dance. And that's what they sit there and celebrate themselves. It's pathetic.
I loved that Trump went to Harrisburg on that night, and like they had to do the split screen thing. That was fantastic. That was like the best call ever.
No, it was. It was smart. It was really smart politics because it was just another FU to that class of people that, you know, that he's sitting there instead of hanging out with them, he's hanging out with regular Americans in Harrisburg. I don't know who made that call, but whoever did was just absolutely smart as they could by doing that.
I love that it was like visually just looking at your TV, here you have Trump talking to a bunch of regular people on one side of the screen and then a bunch of people in tuxedos going, this president's trying to take away the First Amendment, blah, blah, blah.
Well, who was it? Was it Woodward or Bernstein that actually had the quote of the night?
Which was what?
I forget which one of them it was now, but he actually got up and said, at a point in history where trust in the media and the press is at an all-time low, I think y'all need to take a good look at yourselves and maybe this celebration in the right place to do it.
Yeah. I tell you, they have a huge problem. And this, and I've said it twice on the TV show now. That's like who, what, when, where, why. That's all you have to do. Just if you can't keep your opinion out of it, And they don't even have to do it that long. They just have to be good, regular, old school journalists for like a couple of months, and America will start buying back in. Like we're a very, very forgiving culture.
Yeah, I'll give a shout out to somebody right now. There's one named Jennifer Jacobs from Bloomberg. Probably I consider one of the best living journalists in the country right now. Just honest, straightforward. There's literally no opinion. It's just who, what, when, where, why. I think she's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, being a writer, I didn't understand, like, that relationship that you get with some readers. I mean, I've been a fan of newsmakers for a long time. And over the last election cycle, and I mean this with all sincerity, a couple of them broke my heart because I really did. Errol Lewis from CNN, for example, he was the New York local political newscaster for our local channel before we was at CNN. And if he said something, I believed it because I thought that he was smart and had integrity. And I messaged him. I said, I want you to know, if you told me the sky was blue, I'd go outside and double check. I don't believe a single thing you say. I think you are a scumbag and a liar. Dave Weigel from The Washington Post just blocked me on Twitter because I was calling him out on all his endless series of lies. Maggie Haberman from The New York Times was a genius at Politico, goes to New York Times, and she's printing false stories on Twitter about how Ivanka's buying her home from the Russians when in fact it was a Lithuanian guy. It just makes no sense. You have careers, but you have to run to sit there and try to, I guess, I don't know, seem fashionable, which is crazy because they're so idiot. They're so hideous looking, half of these people. They're never going to be like on an actual red carpet.
Now, do you think all of this is like they just have to tear Trump down as fast as they can.
I think it's the culture of that town, of that world, that you possibly walk into. You won't be able to go. How could you possibly go to the farmer's market on Sunday and look, you know, your neighbor who you don't know their name in the eye? If you sit there and have an article that's not completely heinous about Donald Trump. You know, some are decent. I think Jennifer Jacobs, as I mentioned before, is brilliant, and I read everything that she writes. But there's a lot of other ones. I mean, and honestly, some mainstream outlets are even better than conservative outlets, because conservative outlets, they are full of it, some of them. Dana Loesch is running to try to be, you know, the right wing. She all of a sudden loves Trump, while she was a never Trumper. Katie Palvidge, you know, Guy Benson. These people couldn't stand him. And now they are, you know, saying hashtag MAGA. It's enough to make you want to throw up. I mean, they're so disingenuous. But that is the nature of D.C. And it is of, you know, power, I guess, corrupts even the most minuscule power. But I think it's about being in that town and having to show that you are an enlightened person and you are, you know, part of the hashtag resistance, even in the smallest way.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see like the Guy Bensons and the Katie Pavlages and the Dana Loeschs. I'm actually glad to see them come around, because I think that's one thing. And Stacey and I were talking about this last week and I think a couple of weeks ago. It's like the right is horrible about circling their wagons. We're horrible about circling our wagons. I mean, voices on the right are dropping like flies. They're absolutely dropping like flies. Milo's gone. Bill O'Reilly's gone. Now, all of these people will rise again like the phoenix from the ashes. But like I see people on the right kind of rooting for Sean Hannity to go away. And I'm like, what are you people doing?
Yeah, and
like,
I know
what are you doing?
You know, but here's the thing, and a perfect example is Tommy Lahr. Now, I don't know Tommy. I was on her show when she had her first show, but I don't know her. I never hung out with her. I never even watched her show, not even when I was a guest. That being said, I'm nothing against the girl. The amount of venom that they ran after to just destroy her publicly, and the Glenn Beck people were a big part of that. And a big reason is some of those people have been in the business for decades and they never made it. You know, they never really made it. They never got to the Ann Coulter style of just fame. I mean, if that's what, and it's amazing how many former actors are in this business, but they never got to that level. And Tommy got there in a year and a half.
Yeah.
And kills them. It kills them, and they will savage somebody. I mean, Bill O'Reilly was on top for 15 years, the number one cable news program for 15 straight years in a row, or I think maybe even longer, like 16 or 17.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, that's insane. Those are like Oprah numbers of years to be on top of your field. And there was blood in the water, and people wanted him out because they're jealous. There's a lot of jealousy in that thing. It's not like, oh, here's for the group. It's, you know, the dollar that's going to your book sale is being taken out of my book sale. It's a big culture like that down there.
Yeah, it's crazy. I find it a lot to be like stand-up comedy. I really do. Like, stand-ups get incredibly jealous of other successful stand-ups.
Oh, they do. And, it's awful.
Oh, it's everywhere. Yeah. And I really try not to fall into that trap.
Stand-ups are the – when I ever do a show and or, like, even an open mic and there's, like – and more than half the room are other stand-ups, I'm like, I'm not getting any laughs tonight because – this is going to be a crowd that the whole time they're going to sit there with their notebook trying to copy your jokes or do versions of the same jokes that you just wrote, and they're not going to laugh. They're not going to sit there and give you the benefit of the doubt because they're going to be in their own heads the entire time and freezing you out. And it's, you know, those are the shows that are the worst. They're not encouraging of each other whatsoever, in my
experience. Well, I tell you, you just gotta stick through it. Like, just, you know, tighten up your chin strap and keep going because, like, I've been doing stand-up for a long time. However, like, my friends in the stand-up comedy world are, like, super supportive and, like, and very encouraging and how's it going? And they're, like, they're genuinely happy for my success, and I'm genuinely happy for their success. And I think that that's – I mean, that's definitely what I'm trying to do with, like, this podcast and theloftistparty.com and the Flipside TV show, like, the whole thing. Like, I want to be a magnet. Like, I don't want to hang out with the haters, right? On the right, on the left, funny, not funny, whatever. I just want to have some fun and have cool people that want to do that with me, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of hate in my heart, so that start there. But I'm from New York.
I love that.
Spend so much
I love
time
that.
For parking, you have to sit there and start getting a lot of hate in your heart.
You're what? You're in Queens?
I'm born and raised Queens. Queens is the day is long. Yes.
Ah, oh, there you go. And that, is that where you're planning on staying, or do you ever think you'll go into the city?
No. I mean maybe. I mean, who the hell knows? But my apartment is two blocks from my mom, who lives across the street from her mom. So. It's you know, maybe we'll get to the Guinea Holy Land of New Jersey, but until then, we're just like a couple blocks from each other.
But how great is that? The food must be incredible. You can just crawl over to your mother's house and she cooks something amazing.
Or orders Chinese like the rest of us do. I have lunch with my brother and my cousin, who's like my brother, who's raised very close to me, every single Monday. We have lunch together and then we have family dinner every Sunday. And I was telling Milo Yiannopoulos that, and he was like so stunned, and he was like, oh, that's why you're so well adjusted. As a joke, because, you know, obviously look at me. That's my life. I mean, I'm from a very traditional, just Italian family. And, you know, I think the thing that makes a great comic, though, sometimes is that dynamic where that's a very unconventional thing for nowadays. And having such a big family, you would look around, people would be saying, you know, insane things left and right. And you kind of take a step back and say, for a normal person, this is insane. And then this is your everyday life. Yeah. I think it's what gave me like a bit of a comic edge, was realizing the genuine insanity about the people that I was surrounded with every single day.
Yeah, that's always a fun thing when you start realizing, like, wow, my normal is somebody else's, like, super weird.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's absolutely. We used to have a bipolar man who lived next door to my grandmother. And my mom, God bless her, I love her, but she is the last one to be cued in on something. Like, she's just in her own world. She's doing her own thing. So there was one day when the bipolar man walked into my grandmother's house completely naked. And my mother walked in like a couple minutes after him, but probably had to have seen him. I don't know how she didn't see him, like, walking the house naked, walked in and said, "What's hanging?" And she really did not get like the hint that there was a naked man standing like, you know, a foot away. It's great, but that's yeah.
That's hilarious. Good that there's like naked bipolar people walking around. That's you know you're in a good neighborhood.
And that's what I call home. Who needs welcome mats?
Oh my gosh! All right, so that's fantastic. What do you think of the first 100 days? I tell you what, I'm done with the first 100. I'm glad we're beyond it. I'm glad we're past it because that's all you heard. That's all you heard. I think it's been a great 100 days. What are your thoughts?
It's been a mixed bag. It's been a mixed bag of 100 days. I think that the Trump's problem has been, I think a bit of his agenda has been hijacked by the mainstream of the party. I think that the wall's probably not going to happen. I doubt it. And unless some miracle happens in 2018, we're going to get killed because the party is not living up to the expectations of the voters. In Paul Ryan's continuing budget, I know we're going to get to that just passed. Paul Ryan, that – can I curse on this thing?
You can curse a little.
Okay, that son of a bitch sat there and just expanded H-2B visas. Now, if you don't know what H-2B visa is, it is for a blue-collar worker. So his bill had increased the amount of blue-collar workers we're going to bring into this country by 20,000 more every single solitary year. How is that going to benefit the massive working class that just voted for Trump? They have new foreign competition, 20,000 new foreign competition every single year. Now, a number of things that Trump tried, obviously the courts were trying to hold him up. Congress is not on his side. The Democrats are doing nothing besides trying to stop him. But it speaks to volumes. I mean, the Democratic Party, and I'm writing this for redalertpolitics.com, the Democratic Party right now is a broken down car. There's the motherboard doesn't know where it's going. People inside are screaming. There's no one driving it whatsoever. And still, that broken down car was able to run over House Republicans. They will fight for nothing. They are feckless. They are ballless. I mean, it is infuriating, absolutely infuriating. Paul Ryan is a joke of a speaker. And, chasing health care, chasing tax cuts, there is so much more that Trump could have done to try to build a more consensus and make it harder for Democrats to fight him. But following Paul Ryan is a loser. Following Paul Ryan has always been a loser. The man is a joke as a politician. My hatred for him is hot and deep, and it sounds like a porn movie, but it is truly, I'm truly disgusted by his speakership. And if Donald Trump does not get it together, we're going to lose the entire American First agenda. It will all have been for absolutely nothing.
Wow. I had no idea about those, that visa program.
Yeah. No one reported it because, Trump said a civil war comment. So that obviously is more important by these idiots in the media. We didn't get anything on the wall whatsoever. They expanded the military by $15 billion without giving an audit to the Department of Defense and the Pentagon, which they have billions and billions of dollars in waste that could be analyzed. We're not getting. The top general? I can't remember his name. Just popped out of my mind. But McMaster's. McMaster's is talking about if we're going to send ground troops to North Korea. This is insane. Build a damn wall. Get an infrastructure bill. Do maternity leave. There were a million. Do right to try, which gives dying people the chance to try experimental drugs. There were so many great populist things that Democrats would have wrapped their arms around out. And instead, Trump is talking about, this the tax cut that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. The Obamacare thing, which is a complete sham. I mean, look, Republicans have control of everything, and they're doing very, very little. And it's not all Trump's fault, but I think that Trump is surrounding himself with a lot of snakes who are sitting there, and it's very, very, very bad, most especially Gary Cohn. But
that's now, this budget goes through what, September?
September. But the permanent addition of the visa holders is permanent until changed. That's a permanent thing. And I mean, they wanted to increase.
Wow. That's so depressing, man. That's so depressing.
It is infuriating because truly House Republicans and congressional Republicans looked at Trump's victory and said, well, that's nice. We have someone to sign our bills now. But they were not going to change one iota. And unless the American First, you know, committee or group or whoever sits there and gets political and gets active and gets motivated and starts primarying some of these people and actually putting the fear of God in them, then we're not going to get anywhere. But it's about time we sit there and we hold the conservative movement's feet to the fire, because if we don't, I mean, then they deserve to get completely destroyed in 2018. Trump does not deserve re-election in 2020. He fought for one people, the American workers. He's done, the H2B is a thing, H1B is a rather, B visa. He's doing a whole audit of that. That's fabulous. His movement on enforcing immigration laws, Jeff Sessions, excellent. His thing on the economy, excellent. Regulatory reform, very, very good. He wants to look at the banks. That's promising looking, but you know, the devil's in the details. There's a lot to be happy about, and I'm very happy. I mean, Trump was my guy since day one. Yet and still, the fact that he's not a wonk is great for campaigning, but it's terrible for governing. And I just get extremely frustrated that Paul Ryan's at the helm right now, because he does not believe at all in the American worker. He's a globalist. He's declared war on the American worker in my eyes, and there's no other way.
I'm stunned that they would grant these visas to like blue collar jobs. I always thought those visas were like for like Silicon Valley, like computer dudes.
So that's H1B. That's the specialty visa. And what they do with those are, this is why, and he ordered an audit of them, which was really, really good. So H1B, you have to do the quote unquote specialty jobs, but you have to pay them only $65,000 a year. Now, a normal person at Facebook gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. So they're still screwing over the American worker, but it's only in these specialty jobs. Now, H2B visas are for non-farm work. So this is not the crop pickers who, you know, you see all the time on CNN. This is people who are maids. These are people who are, you know, are doing blue collar work that could absolutely go to Americans, 110%. This is not, you know, this is for people who work at summer camps. This is for people who do minimal labor. And to increase the pool of potential workers means you're going to reduce by market forces the amount of money Americans make. And
why in the heck, that has to be evident to Paul Ryan. That has to be. Why in the heck would they do that?
Because he doesn't care about Americans. He never has. And he is a terrible politician. Back in 2011, I live in New York, and I used to run campaigns. I worked for Thomas Massey and Bob Turner and Michael Bloomberg, and I used to run this. So I'm a little more wonky and geekier than the average person. But back in 2011, when Paul Ryan first ran the House, he, if you remember, he was going to do this Medicaid reform and Social Security reform, and he was planning out the economy until the year 2100. It was absolute lunacy. It was utterly rejected. The plan didn't make any sense whatsoever. So he said, okay, forget about 2100. We're doing it in 5 years. It was even crazier. I mean, he was being laughed out by everybody. This is when he was in the chairman of the House and Ways Committee. Anyway, he was the face of the Republican Party for that brief time. There were special elections held in this country in safe Republican seats, and Republicans were losing them because they were running, people were running against Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan doesn't understand the national implications of politics. He's an ideologue through and through. He's a small L libertarian when it comes to workers. And he's everything bad. I've always said this. He's everything bad with the Republican Party. And he shows people, as long as you have muscles, a dopey blue eyes and a widow's peak, you can go far in this country. There's nothing else holding that man together.
Well, I tell you, is there any way that like this whole wall thing will be revisited in September when it comes back around again?
I think the only time you're going to see the wall potentially happen, now they say it's going to happen in September. The only way that I could absolutely see it happen is if like the El Chapo money comes in. They're suing El Chapo for $14 billion.
I think that's hilarious. Best idea ever.
Yeah. El Chapo money, or if they do it through either a reconciliation bill, which is very, very hard. I can imagine doing that, or in a lame duck session. Like, let's say the Democrats just get obliterated in 2018 by some miracle and lose a bunch of Senate seats, like Joe Donnelly in Indiana or Claire McCaskill in Missouri. And before the next legislative session begins, they just tell him, like, look, guys, you already lost. Sit there and, you know, give a big F you to the Democratic Party, which is what happens quite often to the outgoing party people. So I think that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen in that time. But you know, even Chuck Schumer was saying today that that there were seven members of the Republican senators who sat there and said they didn't want to vote for a wall. So it's extremely infuriating, and it's an extremely short-sighted thing. And like Ann Coulter has said in the past, and she's absolutely right, immigration is everything. It's 100% everything. And without controlling our borders, we are, you know, a marketplace, not a country.
I tell you, I agree as well. Immigration is everything. You either have a country or you don't. You either have a country or you don't. And that's like, it was terrifying to me when the WikiLeaks came out and, you know, you had Hillary Clinton saying that she dreams of a borderless country with green energy, blah, blah, blah. That was terrifying.
Yeah, she's never going to live in Tijuana, and neither is Chelsea. And she's not, you know, do you ever see that image of Hillary walking to that poor person's apartment? There's an image. You can look it online. She takes a tour. I don't know in what godforsaken city, but she goes into a tour for a poor person's apartment, and she looks horrified. It's the same look that a normal person has when they go home with a Tinder date and they look at it and they're like, oh, my God, I'm going to get killed here. It's the same exact look, and she looks horrified by it because she's never going to have to live like that.
Yeah, yeah. But she has hot sauce in her purse, so if she does get attacked, she can.
She knows the real struggles of black people, then, because she's got hot sauce in her purse.
That's the thing that always kills me. It's like these Democrats, like out in the Hamptons and in the Palisades and Beverly Hills, these super, super, super rich people. They always vote Democrat, and I don't understand it.
I mean, I think that there's a guilt factor in it. I really do.
Oh, I mean, I understand that, but like, I mean, it's just like you can pay more if you're like one of the guys who started DreamWorks sold his house today for like $85 million. Okay, so if you think that there is all this injustice and all these people need help, write a check, dude. Grab your checkbook and write a big fat check. Like, why do we all have to do it?
Yeah, and they probably feel they already do, but it's more than, you know, and I've said this a couple of times, every human being innately wants to be part of something bigger than themselves, either a religion or a country or a cause or some social group or a town, and be very active in that thing. For a bunch of these social justice warriors and these super liberals, being liberal, the identity of being liberal, is their entire world. If they had to actually sit there and deal with the fact that, like, welfare has made the black family poorer since the 1960s on average, and have to actually come up with real facts of how all of their social programs have utterly failed those they intend to help, I mean, it would be like an Orthodox Jew seeing Jesus rise from the dead. They wouldn't know how to handle it. Their entire worldview was wrong. They just couldn't possibly deal with that because it's what they've wrapped their whole lives in.
Yeah, I tell you, it's driving me crazy because I wanted to talk about that on the last TV show. This whole thing, like, you know, Obama's like, hey, we tried this thing with Cuba for like 40 some years and it didn't work. So now we're going to try something else. And I'm like, OK, that's cool. Let's apply that to everything. Let's apply that to the war on poverty. We've been trying this for God knows how many years. It's not working. Let's try something else. Let's try capitalism. Let's get some money into these like ghettos and inner cities and see what happens when they start businesses.
And you could tell the true dishonesty, especially in the media, by how they're reporting Venezuela right now. Venezuela is a hellhole. People are eating their pets. And
how many people got killed today?
I dozens. I mean, it's a hellhole. It's a human hellhole in a paradise. Venezuela is a beautiful country, warm all the time, could be a major farming nation. They have oil, they have everything. And it's a hellhole because of just socialism. And I see like Fusion TV and a couple of these people reported, and they're acting as if it's just – they don't know why it's gone like this. It's just gone like this. There's no trust in the system. So therefore, no,
It's because of Hugo Chavez and the system that he created and the fact that you're all enslaved by the state. And, you know, it is totally insane. It is like watching a Dane Cook movie and saying it's funny. It's not. We need to sit there.
See, like, now I will remind you, like, stand-up comics love to hate on other stand-up comics.
Oh,
no,
he's
I
not
laughed.
I'm not
going to say anything about Dane. I know some people who don't like Dane at all, but I understand what you're saying. Like, Venezuela, I'm not even kidding. I have to Google this. Like, I think 8 people were killed today. They were, like, electrocuted when they were trying to break into a bakery.
Well, that's the same country that doesn't allow them to bake brownies anymore. Bakers can't bake brownies anymore because all they're supposed to bake is bread, and they weren't making enough on bread because that's price controlled. So they would sell brownies, and there was a big government crackdown. You can't even get brownies.
And I mean, what are the potheads supposed to do? Smoke all the time? No, I think that it's insane. But this is what, you know what, Berkeley and all these very far left liberal colleges should do. Instead of having, you know how Jews have birthright and Greeks have birthright, you go back to your home country for like 3 months. They all have to visit Venezuela for 6 months. They have to live in Venezuela for 6 months. All of these socialists, and then they could sit there and afterwards, after they've eaten a dog before and been electrocuted to try to get a piece of bread, then they can come back and look at the grocery store and say, you know what, it's not so bad here.
Okay, so I'm looking at the article right now. Venezuela, 8 people are dead. They were electrocuted. They were looting a bakery, and they were trying to steal a refrigerator. There was an electric fence, and somebody touched a cord. Something happened. But zappity zap, looters got zapped. Now, that's not funny because those people were starving to death. However, it's kind of funny because they were trying to steal the refrigerator and they don't have any food.
It is. It's also kind of funny because, you know, like, one of their last words was like, Jose, you had one job.
I don't have any food, but man, this refrigerator is right here. I think we should grab it. You know what? Good idea. Zap. Socialism doesn't work. They're talking about Bernie running again. That was in the news today. Bernie Sanders.
No,
he'll
Biden.
Be the first one to run in a wheelchair, like as he's walking up. And you know what? Honestly, if he did that, if he was in a wheelchair campaigning, I think the theme song should be "These Boots Are Made for Walking." I'm sorry, or "Riding Dirty." One of the two.
Because
he'll be like 79, 80.
That's right. They could use some Bob Marley. Get up, stand up. Stand up if you can.
I don't know if Bernie has the stamp. I mean, 78. I mean, my grandma's 79. So I can't, you know, run the country. You'd be 83 by the time it was over. There are some people who still got it in their 80s, but, you know, few and far.
I just like what he stands for. Like, I'm terrified. I really am. I'm terrified. Like, if it was just the millennials who voted and that was it. Millennials voted and nobody else. Hillary wins in a landslide. I think Donald Trump gets 4 votes. That's it.
I don't think that map – I think the map – I know the map you're referring to. It's not exactly correct because not all states were polled. So I think that's a guesstimation. But yes, millennials did vote for Hillary in a landslide, less so than Barack Obama and even more so sat out. But that is why – and that is what was so frustrating to me is – I made the case for Donald Trump throughout the entire primary because we couldn't go back to the George Bush method, which was everyone running besides Rand Paul and Donald Trump. Every Republican was promising more war, more inflationary spending, more of the same. And I was like, you know what? If we get Trump, who knows? Maybe we'll get some things like right to choose. Maybe we'll break up some of the big banks. Maybe we'll get some in between where Trump will sit there like a bulldozer and say, you know, the system isn't working right now. His education reform, it was student loans would be capped at a certain percentage. Students would have to pay them back every month for 15 years, and everything after that would be paid off by the government. It's not exactly free market capitalism, but there's not free market capitalism in the education system already. So as long as we're spending money, spend it on our future, spend it on people. I mean, if we're not going to have this libertarian free market, then let's at least direct as much money to students as we do to Walmart or these companies that outsource jobs. So he had all these great fabulous ideas, and that is my frustration. The first 100 days, all I see is Paul Ryan's agenda written across the wall, and it's not the agenda that could sit there and give millennials a chance to sit there and say, wow, okay, he's not a monster. Okay, you know, Republicans aren't evil. Okay, maybe everything I've heard isn't exactly, you know, what I've been told, and it would give especially not even just millennials, but Generation Z, who are the new 17-year-olds right now, they're going to be walking into that presidency. They're, I mean, I was – when I was 18, George Bush was in, was president and – or sorry, when I was like 17 – or it was like 16, 15, George Bush was president. And he and the Iraq war was going on, and that fundamentally impacted my generation. You know, that's a big part of why millennials moved so far away from Republicans was because of George W. Bush and how miserable a lot of his policies were for us. So, and I wanted to join the Marines. I'm not, you know, bashing people who did that, but that is that was a significant thing. And I said, okay, we got to try something new. And I just get frustrated because I feel like Generation Z is up for grabs. They're tired of this social justice warrior nonsense. They're following people like PewDiePie on YouTube, and they're completely going to smash the system millennials have created for them. Only if we don't follow exactly what Paul Ryan and the established Republicans want to do. And so far, I see it marching that in that area.
So I always want to be optimistic, or at least try, or have a pathway to optimism. Like, I'm happy to know I'm on the path, right? I just want to know I'm on the path. So, like, how do we go about, like, making these changes? How do, is it just like getting guys who say one thing and do another? Do we just throw them away and try to get somebody else?
I think that it has – you know, there's some really interesting people right now on the right. People like Milo, people like Gavin McGinnis, people like Mike Cernovich, the non-traditional, you know, non-Heritage Foundation Republicans who have massive, massive followings, who back Trump thoroughly through and through. Instead of worrying about – you know, their own celebrity or you know, just changing culture, which is what they're all about and fighting the media, which is great. They need to sit there and there needs to be somebody, not just them, but just has to be somebody who is the political voice for the America First movement. Because there's a lot of – because the America First movement, I will give credit to, unlike the Tea Party, they're not kicking out intellectuals. They're not – they're trying to affect culture, which is great. But there's no political arm, and we have to create a political arm. So the Democrats have Act Blue and the Daily Cause. America First movement needs something like that to sit there and find new candidates, run for all sorts of office, and pressure, and run commercials, and lobby, and fight for certain issues, because it can't be Trump by himself with Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and, you know, Ross and Wilbur Ross and a handful of other people. It has to be an institution, and I see the American First people confronting social justice warriors and free speech. I see them having intellectuals in their own publications out of Claremont University, all fabulous, but they need a political arm, and that has to start, and I don't know who's going to start it, but it has to start.
Now, I know you know Milo, mm-hmm. and I think Milo's awesome. I really do. Like, super entertaining, super funny. That dude, like, makes me laugh a lot. And now, do you know Gavin as well?
Yeah, I just hosted Gavin's show on Thursday on Compound Media.
Something really, really weird happened, and I would love to talk to him about this. I would love to find out. And then I'll talk – I just want to talk a little bit about Gavin. So I started doing Red Eye on Fox News.
Yeah.
And like the second time – I used to do it back way, way back in the early days when Greg first started it, and I would be live via satellite from L.A., but that was like zero fun. But now that I'm – spending a lot of my time in New York, I started going into the studio. So like the second time I went in there, people were talking like Gavin's never going to be on the show anymore. And I'm like, ooh, what did he do? And they're like, oh, he wrote a letter. He wrote an open letter to Fox News, and I haven't been able to find it anywhere.
But yeah, I know the letter.
What was it? What happened?
He basically told Fox News, like, I'm not going to do your network anymore because all you do is have these dumb blondes who want to make a name for themselves, who don't know about any issues whatsoever, who are just pretty, all over your network. I'm not going to debate them anymore. Like, I'm not going to be on with with just people who are just trying to be famous and don't know about any issues whatsoever and just bash. I have had a few names in it. And he's like, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to waste my time sitting there talking to women who, you know, their names are Bambi and they have a sleeveless shirt and they're giving the hard news.
Oh, okay. All right. So I thought maybe I was kind of hoping that he knew something, like he could see the handwriting on the wall, because like that there's this huge shakeup at Fox right now.
Yeah.
And I, for the life of me, I don't understand it. I mean, I can kind of understand the Bill O'Reilly thing. Stacey and I were talking about it last week, and like he settled out of court. And if you have a settlement, people are not supposed to be talking about it, so you don't have to pay him the money, blah, 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 blah. His ratings were huge. But anyway, I think they're happy that Bill O'Reilly's gone. And I don't know what's going to happen with Jesse Waters. I think that dude might be gone too.
I'm not a fan of Jesse, but I know some people. I know I'm very good friends with one very high profile person at Fox. Very, very high profile. He used to have his own show at Fox. And no names, but he told me Bill O'Reilly had no friends at the network. That everyone hated him. He had a horrible attitude. I've had dinner with Bill O'Reilly 3 times. And it's very much like kiss the ring and show me why you deserve to be my presence. It is a very tough, he has an attitude and he's making you well known about it. And apparently he had that with everyone at Fox. So when you're in that kind of situation, when you are the king of a network and you don't treat people and you treat people like you are the king. And then when, you know, things go down, apparently people want to sit there and throw you under the bus. Sean Hannity might be leaving. That was reported today too.
Yeah.
You know, well, one, Rupert Murdoch, I think, and is no longer in control. Not Rupert, but oh God, what the hell is his name? He worked for the Trump administrator, Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes isn't there anymore. That was a huge loss. I think that they want to turn the network into something else, the Sons, the Murdoch Sons. And there are also, I said this before in the project, there's a lot of just thirsty bitches out there who want their chance, who want to be famous, who want to sit there and have that moment in the sun. And they'll take down somebody. They'll make – I know for a fact, and I know this as I have the email exchange. There's a Fox News host that I know who's married with children, and he was having an affair with one of the women at Fox, who was she wasn't even paid. She was just like on there for free. And she was trying to get a contributorship. She was trying to get all this stuff. And so she thought having an affair would be a way to it. And she didn't get one. But she became a high profile person at another network. She is threatening a lawsuit against the host I told you that she had an affair with, simply for both ratings and news and for the fact that she thinks that it will give her some profile and some money. But it was completely consensual, 100% consensual.
Wow.
And women, I mean, listen, I'm not shitting on women, and there's a lot of women who do go through abuse and are attacked. But when one comes out and then 37 come out, not everyone's an angel, but not everyone's Bill Cosby either. You know, and I think that a lot of people are. I mean, there was that one woman who said that Bill O'Reilly called her Blondie, and that was sexual assault.
Right.
It's a lot of people trying to get a quick paycheck because they're done with what they're doing and they're ready to just make some quick money. And also, there are a lot of shitheads in the media. I know one gay person at Fox who offers people money for shows. All like another gay guy is like, oh, you want to get on Kennedy? Okay, well, you know, maybe we'll get dinner sometime. And I know people who take him up on the offer. It is a very corrupting thing to have that much influence, and it is and there's a lot of shitheads who use it to their advantage, but there's also a lot of people who are looking for a quick payout and they're hoping to be a victim.
Wow, that bums me out. I guess it's the free market. Someone else is going to bubble up. Someone else that. Just I was looking at, like, I think it was an article in Variety or The Hollywood Reporter, just about how much money Fox News makes for 21st Century Fox. And it is a quarter of their yearly operating budget. Fox News brings in $6.6 billion a year.
Yeah. And there is somebody, though. And there is Tucker Carlson now. And Tucker is doing a fabulous job. And he's a wonderful person. And I've known him, not Friends, but I was on Fox and Friends when he was the host. And he's a wonderful person, truly, and has a good sense of humor, clean, doesn't drink, and great and wonderful. And no one
I want to do a music video with Tucker Carlson.
And he would probably be up for it because he's fun and he's funny and he's smart and he's, you know, I think that he right now is probably the voice of the intellectual American First movement, him and Laura Ingraham nationally. But he's smart and he's great, and no one is so needed, so permanent as Bill O'Reilly thought he was. If I don't know who's like the number one, say if Lady Gaga died tomorrow, knock on wood, I'm not saying it wanted to, but if she died tomorrow, she'd be forgotten in 2 weeks. There'd be just somebody else waiting.
I have a new Lady Gaga bit. I think I'm going to try it. I might try it tonight. I don't know. It's not really a bit, but it's like she was just at Coachella, right?
Right.
Okay. So they're redoing A Star Is Born. So how pissed would you be? So they're redoing A Star Is Born with Lady Gaga. She's on the bill at Coachella. So you stand out there in the hot in the sun all day, and you're like, "Ooh, here comes Lady Gaga! Here comes Lady Gaga!" And then she comes out on stage, and she's like, "Do you want to be in my movie?" And people are like, "Yeah." And then she's gonna start singing some crap song from her new. You're like, "No, no, bitch! You do the hits. You do the hits."
Did they pick her out because she's mad? Did they pick her because she had a big nose like Barbara Streisand? They're like, "Oh, this works." I mean, she's an actress all of a sudden.
You knew she was going to make that transition.
But imagine trying to go to like a Lauryn Hill concert. Lauryn Hill in the 90s, the greatest probably female hip hop artist of the 90s. And you go to see her shows and she's 4 hours late and she does a spoken word performance because she's nuts.
Oh my gosh. I'm so bummed out about Fox News. It really does look like they're imploding. But I guess Tucker's doing well. That's good.
Tucker's fabulous. And there will be another one. There is a market for it. If you build it, they will come. And maybe their model's outdated. You know, maybe their audience is too old. And maybe there's the next conservative media platform is just waiting to bubble up. And if Glenn Beck wasn't so crazy and thinking he was going blind every 5 minutes, he would have had it. But it's not going to be at the Blaze. But it will be there because there's a market for it. There's an audience for it. Nothing is so permanent. Nothing is, but Fox had that for a long time. I think when Roger went, I think it was the slow, you know, the slow push from everybody. But there will be another one, and the future is the internet anyway. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, here's what concerns me about the internet. You can't just like stumble across a website on the internet. Like I was on, and I'm seriously, I'm not like when I'm on CNN, just this last Sunday for like 2 minutes or whatever, like. Everybody in the airport saw me. Everybody. People were clicking around. The flip side, even though it's on like U2 America and Family Entertainment TV, it's on and people can like flip around and like kind of find it. You can't just stumble across the Blaze. You can't just stumble across CRTV. I mean, as much as I love the internet and yeah, I think it is the future, like how do we get people to like just to stumble across, people on the right who are having fun and want to convince them that freedom is better than socialism?
Well, ask Tommy Lauren. She did it. Ask Milo Yiannopoulos. He did it. Milo's been on literally a handful of shows ever. Tommy.
I guess he did it through Twitter, though.
Yeah, and he was just a fun person, fun personality. The first time I ever talked to Milo, this girl tweeted him like, "You're, you know, this thing and that thing, and you're just a 32-year-old SOB, you know, whatever, whatever, whatever." And he wrote back, "I'm 31, you C-word." That's all he cared about. But it is the future. And Tommy Lauren's final memos, they went viral. They had 50, 60 million people watch them on the internet because they went viral. I mean, I truly believe if you build it, they will come and people will stumble upon it. And then maybe they'll get network shows. But it's about building that audience. And that's
where do you think Tommy's going to land?
I allegedly, this is all alleged, I heard that there are some people with a lot of money are trying to make a new network, and they're offering Tommy a contract and Bill O'Reilly a contract, and probably Sean Hannity, if he leaves, they'll offer him a contract too, and the gang will be back together in an alternative to Fox. Allegedly, that's what people are working on. I don't know if it's ever going to happen.
I've heard a similar rumor. I have heard a similar rumor. That's all good. I hope they do, because, man, oh, man, it is in the mainstream media. I did every once in a while I'll update my list of like how many shows are dedicated full time to making fun of the right. And the list has just now grown to 13-1. There are literally 13 full time comedy shows or discussion shows that do nothing but just ridicule the right. And then there's me with my little Flipside TV show.
I have a question. How many underpaid white male writers have to work every single week to get Samantha Beebe slightly funny?
I don't know.
And I mean, that's a big part of her thing. It is ironic, though. Same thing with, who was it? Larry Wilmore, who was talking about being woke. It was all written by like white male writers, the whole entire thing, which is like the funniest part of it. If they only had to sit through the room with these people and actually see who was making these jokes, and they would be like, wow, you know, they're speaking for me and my generation. I think that humor on the left, although they still may have viewers, a lot of people who are even older who watch their shows, I think that really since Jon Stewart left The Daily Show, there has been a gigantic vacuum for someone funny on the left with that kind of audience and that kind of base.
Yeah, I mean, I think John Oliver does up. I think he's doing pretty good numbers.
Oh, he's sweating all the time in that British accent. He's. I've never won. Can someone repeat one joke by John Oliver ever? I mean, really? It's.
No, I just remember one bit that he did that drove me crazy when he had like 99 people dressed up as scientists against one guy, and it was a climate change bit. That's all I remember. About that. Oh, and then I remember him begging Donald Trump to run for president.
Yeah, that's the only one
anyone. We're begging you.
Yes, that's the only one anyone remembers. But Bill Maher is funny, but he's certainly not what everyone else is. These other quote unquote comedians. Yeah. And you know, I think that there's really a gigantic hole. These people are not that good. They're not that funny, and everyone knows it. So while they may have some decent numbers. They're not attracting these humongous audiences. They're speaking to the same people who are watching Bill Nye the Science Guy or whatever the hell. Bill Nye, really like the engineer and stand-up comic. But I don't see them have the influence that Jon Stewart had and the magnitude that Jon Stewart had. And it's a gigantic vacuum that I don't know if it can be replaced.
I was recently at CBS for some meetings. Now, of course, this was at CBS, but I guess Colbert's numbers are doing well. And that shocks me, because I really thought like the Colbert Report, I thought that was really a funny idea, blah, blah, blah. Then he started taking himself seriously and
he's running for president and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But then I thought when he took over the Late Show that like America's not going to dig this. America's not going to dig politics in their Late Show. And I guess they are. I guess he's doing okay.
Well, you know what he's doing? He's doing better than Fallon, which is like the first time that's happened for NBC in some time. And I knew
Fallon would burn out. He was just it was just too much. You can't keep that level going.
Yes. And a lot of what Fallon does is great. Fallon is not a wonderful interviewer. If you ever listen to his interviews, he's not very, very good. I think that Colbert is a lot more personable on interviews as well. But when you want to see a Fallon thing, you watch one of those viral videos. It's really all Fallon has. It's really like spectacular. But yeah, I think that he did burn it. And also he's a bit annoying. I mean, I like him. I like him a lot. But I think that there's something to a New Yorker. Not I'm shitting on my own people, but I think that there are very few New Yorkers who are pleasurable to listen to for long periods of time and can hold it.
That's so funny you should say that, because we're at the end of the show. That was perfect timing. You know what? I can handle New Yorkers for like 59 minutes and 37 seconds. We try to keep it. Ryan, I swear you're a fantastic guest. I loved having you on. You got to stay in touch, and you got to let me know what's going on with you and everything. And I tell you what,
stand up, you should come see me.
I should. I'm going to be back in New York in June. And okay. So we're definitely going to have to get together and hang out. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Now absolutely. I'm in Levittown, but I'll schlep. I'll figure it out. All right. So, we do a thing at the end of every show. It's just like the TV show Michaeltopia, because there's real world there's rules in the real world. If you have one, that's great. If you don't worry about it. There's rules in the real world we all have to follow that don't make any sense. But things are different in Michaeltopia. So, like, here's an example of a Michaeltopia that I have. In Michaeltopia, I get a phrase that I can just freak out over. Right now, the left and other cultures have this, like, if you say this word, I'm going to lose my mind and be violent, and you're not allowed to be shocked. So in Michaeltopia, I'm allowed to have a phrase where if you say it to me, I'm going to Hulk out and get violent and I can't get in trouble. My phrase, I think, is going to be the Russians hacked the election. Whenever somebody tells me the Russians hacked the election, I get to throw a brick through a Starbucks.
I think that if I could create a law and that people to follow, or a rule people to follow for no particular reason, I think that when you are outside the vicinity of your house, yeah, and especially when you're talking to, like, and you're working, you should only be speaking English. And the only time you're allowed to break that is when you want to curse in a foreign language, because that's always acceptable, and foreign languages have the best curses.
That's fantastic.
Especially the Greeks, and my favorite is Malaka, which is somebody who masturbates to the point of mental retardation. So my favorite curse word in any language.
That's fantastic. Stacey, do you have one?
I do. In Michaeltopia, if you are a journalism organization and you're giving out a scholarship, you can't give one to a place like Berkeley that doesn't actually allow people to speak freely.
I love it. I love it.
They
you
did
guys,
that. This was, they did that.
It's horrible. It's horrible. I say we cut off Berkeley. Like, you're not allowed to have it. I did this joke on the latest Flip Side where I show it's a black and white photo of these, you know, people of all races in Berkeley, and they're holding this sign, freedom of speech. And I go, isn't it wonderful when you have to get a black and white photo to show the last time Berkeley was for freedom of speech?
That's brilliant.
It was fun. Okay, Ryan, thanks so much for being on the Loftus Party. All you guys, go to loftusparty.com. Go to the Facebook page. Lots of great stuff there. All kinds of awesomeness on the website. Ryan, is there anything you want to pimp before we say goodbye?
Just RellerPolitics.com. I'm on Twitter at Ryan Grudowski.
Yeah, follow that sucker. All right, thanks, you guys. We'll see you next week.